Chapter 8. When Spock had been young, he had been witness to countless arguments between his parents and Cybok. They had echoed throughout the house, his mother's voice rising and falling, matching and overtaking Cybok's, while his father had supplied the punctuation. Cybok had been their trouble child, was the one Spock thought they expected to worry about. Sometimes he wondered if his own, smaller rebellions were more of a betrayal. Even if they would not voice the thought, they had hoped Spock would be an easier child to raise. He thought he had been, as he had only run away the single time, and had had every intention of returning. He had not antagonized anyone, and he did well in school. But for all the conflicts he had had with his parents, he had truly only ever been held accountable by his mother. Even when Spock had fled to Riverside, his father had not disciplined him, not in the way he might have done Cybok. Spock expected it had something to do with the perceived emotionality of his attachment to Jim. His father judged that his mother would be better suited to understand and guide Spock. Apparently that was going to change. Cybok and his mother were both conspicuously absent from the house, murmuring something about going to Shikar to make sure the house was properly stocked, leaving Spock and Sarek alone. Spock had not realized, which he could not be blamed for. Jim would have noticed. But Jim was a suspicious creature, and Spock was not. So Spock had gone to his room, which seemed unfamiliar, even though he had been gone 3 months. 3 months, how was that all? How could that possibly have been all it was? He turned all of his computers on methodically, and then his holo, and it was only when he turned to perhaps go get a snack that he realized his father was standing in his doorway, silent and watchful. "Spock, your mother is concerned," Sarek said. And Spock thought sometimes that Vulcan syntax and speech patterns lent themselves to restating the obvious with startling frequency, juxtaposed with standard or English. Perhaps he would write a paper, or ask Amanda. She would have insight after her work on the Universal Translator. "She has expressed those concerns to me already," Spock told his father. "Unless you have concerns of your own to contribute," and that was a segue. He winced internally. That was too human. He would have to curb that before returning to school. "Spock, how often do you speak for him?" Spock felt his lips twitching towards a frown, and schooled his features quickly, still thrown by the question. How frequently did he speak for Jim? Rarely, he thought, and only when Jim was refusing to speak. Jim was more than capable of advocating for himself, and did so. Except, that was untrue. Jim rarely advocated for himself. Jim had long ago decided that actions were better than words, or had been taught that silences and defiance were better options to attempting to rationalize and converse with the world that did not want to hear him anyway. "I do not understand," Spock began, only to be interrupted again. "It is an admirable thing you have done," his father said, stepping into Spock's room and looking out the south-facing window. "To give him a family, a support system. He was very alone. It was astute to recognize that you could not be everything." Spock bit back the obvious, which is that he could have been everything, if they had stayed on Earth. Pike was a contingency plan that was made necessary by Sarek and Amanda's own actions, and Spock's status as a minor. If there had been a possibility of keeping Jim safe, Spock would have done it. But Tarsus IV had proven that Spock would not always be able to be there, that until Spock was 18, other people were necessary. "Ah," Sarek said, in a tone that meant he was both amused and disappointed. But perhaps it was not so admirable. Spock looked at his father, the worn, severe lines of his face, and wondered how, in some way, his father did not understand him, could not see in Spock's devotion to Jim his own devotion to Amanda. Sarek had met and married Amanda in a year's time, a thing that had never been done. Vulcans and humans had in the past entertained romantic relationships, but to Spock's knowledge, none before his parents had attempted it successfully. Vulcan courtships lasted decades, one marriage was the end result, and yet his father had flouted all tradition in order to marry Amanda. Spock was merely insisting on a friendship. He did not see why he should be vilified for it. Even more worryingly, he was uncertain what his father was getting at, and it was starting to remember that his father was not only powerful, but vastly, wildly intelligent. Spock had never been on the receiving end of his father's attention like this. He found he did not care for it. "You have always been a child of two worlds," Sarek said, watching him steadily. "You have always had great potential and have made a way for yourself." "That is untrue," Spock said. The floor was smooth and glowed dully in the late afternoon light. It would be warm if he put his bare feet on it, unlike all Earth's surfaces, where all floors were chill to the touch. Spock wondered what that was that made it so. "Explain," Sarek said, and sat in the chair across from Spock's bed. Spock did not want to explain. It was humiliating and private to explain all the ways in which he had not made a way for himself. He had found his way by following Jim, and taken his cues from Jim always. "On Earth, I was very alone," Spock said, slow and careful. He had to find the right way to word it, so that Sarek would understand and not damn Jim. His father was. He might understand. Spock was surprised by how desperately he wanted Sarek to understand. "He gave me a place to sit and someone to. Our schools are very social, and it is difficult to be an outsider in that setting." "He ensured you were not." Spock had been so alone, uncertain and afraid even. And Jim had been frustrating and wonderful, and had deftly maneuvered Spock from his loneliness, taught by example how to find someone and hold on to them when there was no compelling reason to do so, save for wanting to. Jim had saved Spock long before Spock thought to save Jim. Jim had been a cruel child and was a cruel adolescent, but he had found Spock and kept him when no one else did, when no one else wanted to. He had trusted Spock with his secrets and held on to the one Spock gave him, and Spock knew that he was different because of Jim, that there was a plan for his life that no longer fit, because Spock was not the Vulcan-committed boy he had been before leaving for Earth. He was, as T'Pring insisted, something different. Spock thought that acknowledging that would have been a lifelong struggle if not for Jim, who made the issue irrelevant. "Yes," Spock agreed, consciously keeping his shoulders loose, his posture correct and non-aggressive. "I was lonely and afraid, and he provided me a safe harbor. I met Jim, and I was no longer alone." "He is strong, then." "Yes." "Perhaps now you must trust that he is strong enough to save himself. You have given him people who want to help him if he will let them. Whatever your motivations for that, Spock, you should trust your instinct that it was the right thing to do." Spock stared after him and felt gutted. Jim was. "Sybok says there is no such thing as T'Hyla," he found himself saying, and Sarek turned, his hand on Spock's doorframe. Spock wishes he could take that back, but he could not hold it all. He had kissed Jim, and now Jim was light years away, and Spock was alone, felt alone for the first time in almost a decade. "Sybok does not know everything," Sarek said, though he was fond, a warmth in his voice. "Sybok believes that the concept is rooted in repression and shame." "You do not?" "I married your mother." The silence that fell then was thick and heavy, as though Sarek wanted Spock to understand something, or to confess something, and Spock already felt he had laid himself too bare as it was. His father reached out after a moment, and touched Spock's cheek. "I am, and always shall be proud of you," Sarek said. "You are my son." Spock stared at his father's retreating back, and sat on the bed, still and quiet for a long time. He knew he had only to reach out for T'Pring or Ston, or even Sybok, but it was not the same. "I am lonely," he sent Jim, laying on his back. "Yeah." Sarek and Sybok returned to Earth after a week, and Spock went back to school, and it was all very civil. Ston filled him in quietly on everything he had missed, and T'Pring stared at him, hard, before turning away. She was doing her hair differently, piling it up in intricate knots, and her school uniform was no match for the way she held herself. Someday, T'Pring would be the best of them all. Spock went to classes, and he came home, and Amanda worked on the universal translator. Spock did well, and it was all familiar, which was good, except that it was providing him time to think. Having time to think was rarely a good thing, but now Spock had kissed his best friend, and he had nothing to distract him from that. The worst of it, the thing that had him laying on his back, staring blankly at the ceiling, was that when Spock had thought of his relationship with Jim and its future, he had never imagined it in a romantic context. He had written the words of their future, and they had been brothers all their days, a sometimes ill-matched duo making their way through space, catching each other's rough edges, but fitting together better than anyone else ever would. He had thought that he would return to Earth and go to Starfleet Academy. It would put him in closer proximity to Jim, whose future had always been a little less well-determined. But Spock had thought that it would likely only take him a semester to get Jim's life in order, and Winona and George Kirk's child was guaranteed acceptance to the Academy. They would go to the Academy, Spock in a Science Corp track, and Jim in engineering. Perhaps, Spock knew Jim had a talent for language, but his tact made communication an unlikely fit. They would obtain the same assignment, and whatever came, it would be theirs to figure out together. The truth was that Spock had not seen the kiss coming, but now he didn't know how he hadn't, because it seemed so obvious. He wondered if this was what had his parents nervous, if they had been obvious to everyone but themselves. And Spock didn't know if Jim had seen it coming, or if Jim had been deferring to Spock in that. He was supposed to be clever, and this was absurd, since he had done the kissing. He had serious doubts about his intelligence. Serious, serious doubts. His pad pinged, and Spock picked it up idly, while Ston and Dupring bickered at each other across the table. The image was Jim, shirt lifted and pants slouched far too low on his hips, so low it seemed they must fall off, torso laid bare, pouting absurdly at the camera. Vulcan pornography was almost exclusively written, which made Jim's image far more tantalizing. Spock's mouth went dry. "Oh," Dupring said, "that is what he looks like." Spock hastily closed the image and looked at her amused face. "He looks different when he is not emaciated," she said. "One reels at the thought," Ston said, and Dupring waved a hand at him. "When will we meet him?" she asked. "How do I say this diplomatically?" Spock mused, lifting an eyebrow at her as he sent a message to Jim. "That was extremely inappropriate. That's kind of the point, Spock." Spock narrowed his eyes at the winky face. Jim was laughing at him. Spock knew it, and he couldn't berate him further, because if Jim knew Dupring had seen it, he would not be ashamed. He would think it was hilarious. "Never?" Ston suggested. "Never," Spock agreed, looking back up, and Dupring shook her head at both of them. "Absurd. One might think you'd be ashamed of him." "One would suppose incorrectly," Spock told her icily, and she nodded. "Good. That is as it should be, then." He watched her walk away, bemused. "What just happened?" he asked Ston. "You are protective, and that is not a common facet of relationships between Vulcans," Ston said, "and Dupring is a traditionalist." "She is not," Spock said. "In some ways, she is intensely conservative," Ston said. His cheeks were tinged a vague green. "But you are a friend, and she... we would hate to think less of you." "The fact that the object of my affections is human..." "Your mother is human," Ston said, picking up his pad and standing as the chimes rang for classes to resume. "And you are half-human. In this, you are granted more freedom than Dupring or I might be." "The expectations are lower," Spock surmised, and Ston inclined his head as they fell into step. "I did not say that the reasons were flattering to you, though I had not thought you to hold the opinion of others in such high esteem." "Others, no. Dupring, yes. It is important to me." "Yes," Ston agreed. "It is fortunate her logic lies with you." It was a strange thing. On Earth, Spock's world had narrowed down to Jim and only Jim. But here he had people whose opinions did matter. He had friends. Not many, but Ston and Dupring were enough. He felt as though he was living two separate lives, but Tarsus had blurred the lines, and Jim's persistence in sending Spock flirtatious, or explicit, messages and photos while he was in school involved Spock's friends in his relationship with Jim. Which was to say that it was not terrifying. Sometimes Spock thought he had the worst timing of anyone in the entire galaxy. Jim's stability with Pike was brand new, in its infancy yet, and wildly untested. For Pike, Jim was still a novelty, and Jim was still regaining the footing he had lost on Tarsus IV. And Spock, well, Spock expected that he would get at least one emergency call. It was too new to be counted on, and Spock had to consider all the variables of this new facet of their relationship. "I wonder," Dupring said one day, as they studied after school, "if those images could be construed as child pornography." Spock stared at her. He was going to have to buy his own communications package, because Jim would only escalate. Or Spock would. Spock would not pretend, even to himself, that this was something he was being reluctantly led into. One of them would escalate, and Spock did not want his parents peering into his usage summary and seeing any of it. It was likely bad enough as it was. Spock got a communications package through an Orion provider, because they had bigger problems than two sexually frustrated teenagers. He kept the original for family and his friends, and the second was for Jim. Use this and only this when you are harassing me. I'm totally your dirty little secret right now. Do you want my parents calling the police and alerting them to the nature of the images you've been sending? Yeah, like your messages aren't any less explicit. Spock called him. Some conversations needed to be had out loud. You are the bane of my existence, he said, settling on his bed and stretching out. His mother was at a seminar for the next 2 days, and Spock had tomorrow free. It was luxury at its finest. You know, it's like 4 in the morning here, right? Jim yawned. And yes, Spock did know. It was called tactical advantage, and he would take what he could get with Jim. Also, I'm hot. Don't lie. Spock opened the photo up again as he laid on his bed, sliding a hand down his stomach. It is a flattering photo. This one wasn't ridiculously posed, and was taken by someone else. It was at school, and Jim had a foil and was laughing, a bruise on his arm indicating he'd lost the match. He was shirtless, and there was a fine sheen of sweat, but he'd cut his hair, and he was... Well, he was a cock tease. Did you open it at school? Jim sounded far too gleeful not to have known that was precisely what Spock was going to do. To bring censor compliments, as always, Spock said, his hand sliding lower, under his pants. He was half hard already from looking at the stupid photo, and now Jim's voice was in his ear. Ston wishes you would confine yourself. You don't have to open them, Jim laughed, and his voice was thick and low, and Spock wanted him so badly. For Jim's 15th birthday, Spock had sent him a crate of Vulcan tea and deliberately ignored the link Jim had sent him. Apparently, there were places one could go to get a custom-made dildo replica of one's dick. Spock had a shady communications package and a tendency to jerk off to terrible duck-faced images of Jim. He was not going to test the limits of the law by ordering a replica of his underage dick and sending it to his equally underage boyfriend. There were limits. What were you doing? Oh, the pic? Ugh. Sulu thinks that he's some kind of, like, martial arts master. There's a pause. I mean, he's not wrong, but I can't tell him that. Obviously, Spock agreed, stroking himself lazily. Anyway, Scotty took the picture. You remember Scotty? The Scottish one whose last name is actually Scott? He's made a new camera he thinks is the shit. I think he's just biding his time because he hacked the Enterprise's specs and... Oh, Jim groans. Spock, she's beautiful. You should see the ship they're building. She's going to be the flagship, and her warp drive is off the fucking charts. Spock wondered what it says about him, that he's sexually attracted to someone who's sexually attracted to a ship. I mean, I was growing up under her, you know, but she never looked like much, but... Are you jerking it out? Attempting to. Want me to talk about something else? Jim asked, and then without waiting for Spock's reply... So I got a vibe for my birthday, and since Pike's at this conference, and everyone is on again with snow, I thought I'd break it in. Oh? Spock was proud of the way his voice did not break, but he knew how close it was. As it was, his dick was leaking, mixed with lubricant and making slick sounds as his hand pumped up and down. He squeezed the base of his dick, a warning to his body. It would be useless. When Jim was like this, Spock was doomed. It was kind of weird trying to get myself that open, you know. I don't think I'm flexible enough. Maybe I should go do a yoga class. But I got the bed just fucking drenched with lube, kept on working it, and then it went in, and fuck, Spock. Felt so full, like I was gonna come apart. I bet your dick is bigger than that. That's all I kept thinking about, how big it felt inside me, how deep it felt like it was going, and about how you're gonna feel even better. You'll be able to fill me up and fuck me until I scream, and then maybe you'll play with it after. Do you think you will? Finger me when I'm still sore from you fucking me? I'd let you. Let you put your fingers in me and keep me open so you could slide back in when you were hard again. Jim, Spock manages, strangled, because he could see it, the way Jim would be loose-limbed, sprawling and pliant, and letting Spock do what he wanted to do to Jim's body. He was making a mess of his hand now, pre-cum dripping everywhere, his balls tight. This was torture. It all was. Unfair that Jim was so uninhibited, wanton and hungry and unashamed. Spock let Jim do the talking, spent too many daylight hours agonizing over every one of these calls. But none of it ever mattered in the moment. In the moment, all Spock wanted was for Jim to keep talking, to hear his breathing change, and the little sounds he made while he fucked into his fist. God, I'm still loose, Jim groaned, and Spock closed his eyes, picturing Jim reaching behind himself to feel fingers tracing the rim of his hole, a finger sliding into the first knuckle easily. If you were here, you could slip right back in. If Sulu wasn't coming over for a run in, Christ, fuck, 3 hours, I'd put it back in. We should plan it. I'll do it for you on a vid, so you can see and pretend it's you. You're going to kill me, Spock managed. Not yet, Jim said, and Spock choked and came, his whole body tensing and hips jerking, seeking. Fuck, you have no idea. No idea how you sound, Jim groaned. So hot. Shit, I'm gonna... Spock! Come for me, Spock said, voice low and hoarse. And before he had a moment to second-guess himself, his phrasing, any of it, Jim was shouting, sounding wrecked as he came. I think that's the best we've done yet, Jim decided after a couple of minutes, where Spock found the strength to get up and clean himself, changing into a casual robe. It was satisfactory, Spock agreed, and Jim laughed at him. Such an asshole, he said. He didn't say anything else, falling asleep easily, but Spock kept the line open, listening to Jim snore lightly and laying on his bed. He could almost pretend that if he reached a hand out, Jim would be there beside him. Almost.